Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, and it's terrific when you're here. We always love it, and we have great conversations with these extraordinary guests who are coming in from all around the world. It's 10 a.m. Eastern here at the Broadcast Center, 7 a.m. Pacific, and it is March 18th, 2022 at the time of this broadcast. Our very special guest for the next 30 minutes live and uninterrupted is Deb Bucci. She's the founder of Life Well Strategies, where she specializes in helping organizations transform workplace culture by offering pathways to increase engagement as well as improve well-being and live a healthy, rewarding life. Deb is a thought leader preparing businesses for the future of work. When employees are engaged, she says it affects more than just their productivity. It affects their personal health, physical health, mental health. And also, when the pandemic first began, employees were more engaged than ever out of fear of losing their jobs. But now engagement has dropped to an all-time low in employee well-being with it. The only way that this is going to shift is if we really hear what employees are saying. A lifelong nurse, Deb Bucci works in the energy stress management well-being niche as a coach, consultant, helping organizations provide research programs as well as resources for their people. And these are all research-based. She really believes in the talent as well of the millennials and Gen Z. She says they are the best and the brightest and the most fearless group of people she has ever had an opportunity to be around. Performing well in a business environment requires one to be whole and resilient while engaging with our fullest energy. She doesn't believe in the term work-life balance. She just calls it life. Performance is a function of ability x motivation. We can expand our knowledge, but our ability remains fairly stable. The variable in this equation really is motivation, and the factors that influence motivation are everything they've been talking about: autonomy, flexibility, and freedom. The website to connect with Deb is livewellstrategies.com. That's livewellstrategies.com. We're very excited to have her here on the show. Let's welcome Deb to the program live from South Carolina. Deb, welcome to Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. Can you hear us, Deb?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Good to hear you, and welcome to the show. It's a pleasure.
It's such a pleasure to speak with you this morning.
Very excited about this topic because we are, you know, we've dealt with so much in the last couple of years. And you and I were having a great conversation about, you know, how things were before the pandemic and how today's employees have even more stress, more responsibility, and less time to take care of themselves. And there was a Gallup study back in 2017 that showed that employee engagement was at an all-time low, with only 33% of the people interviewed demonstrating any type of engagement. It's really concerning. We'll talk about that in a minute, but first I'd love to know what initially inspired you to want to do this kind of work. What was it about this work that really spoke to you, Deb, and pointed you in the direction of wanting to make a career out of it?
That's a great question, and I'll try to keep it brief. I'm a lifelong nurse, and what prompted me to make a pivot into the well-being space happened twofold. Once, the first way was I came through my nursing career right at the time that health promotion was coming on the scene. And I had an opportunity to see what a big difference that made in how people approached their own health and illness, and seeing possibility of healing versus trying to fix what was broke, so to speak, by poor lifestyle choices. And that was intriguing. I always wanted to help people live weller. So looking through that lens, I worked for a global media company as an on-site healthcare center nurse, manager, wellness coach. And I got to see firsthand up in front what the impact of work specifically had on employees who very much loved what they were doing, but were dealing with the stressors of what their job was. And in the sector that I was in a media company, that you have everything from the creative team to the journalists to the legal to the accountants, ad sales, all of that, and each one of them were being impacted by the stressors of their work differently. So I had an opportunity to do a deeper dive and into what those stressors were and see what we could do as an organization to help correct that, solve that, or at least listen. And sometimes listening to what those stressors were was part of solving a big, big question. Did I answer that for you?
You did, yes. And I think that's a key thing is the listening, because, you know, our lives are so busy and there's so much noise coming at us all the time, and it can seem overwhelming. That's one of the big things that people say is that they don't feel heard, not just understood, but they don't feel heard, and that it's really important to take time to listen. And that's one of the beauties of what you do as a deep listener, is to really, you know, dig in deep and listen to what it is that they're expressing, which helps us then get a chance to work towards living well. When you created Live Well Strategies, what was your initial mission and vision? And tell us about some of the extraordinary work that you do.
My initial vision was to be able to have an opportunity to scale the needs of an organization or an individual and provide comprehensive services. So in saying that, I have access to a lot of different specialties. I believe very strongly as a nurse and a coach, and I do have a certification in coaching. So before I say stay in my lane, I really very much feel that that's important. If I was dealing with an individual that I felt had some deeper psychological issues, I would refer them to one of my team members to help. So in building my organization, my small company, I wanted to have access to people that could also scale and be able to be reflexive to what we were undergoing. And what I found in the impetus in forming this was to be able to do something that was unique or build something that was unique for each person that I was hired to do. You know, the coaching and consulting, there's a million different assessments. There's a lot of branded approaches to all of this. And I think it was really most important to me to be able to do things individually for whatever organization asked me to do. And so that was my impetus, to have my own autonomy and freedom and flexibility and have the team that I needed at my fingertips.
That's really fantastic. You know, having conversations about the crisis of employee engagement well before 2020 March seemed even unsustainable then. Then March 2020 sort of became like an eruption, convulsion. It just really sort of, I guess it sort of opened our eyes to a lot of different things, didn't it, in the last
it did.
2 years or so now. What are some of the things you observed?
It was really interesting that some organizations were prepared much better than others. Some organizations domestically that are global, companies like GE, for example, that are used to having teams all over the world, were able to scale much quicker. There were others that hadn't prepared for that really depended on people being right under a rooftop whether that was really essential or not. So I saw, I observed those companies that were able to get up to speed quick. The other part that was really interesting to me, too, were the organizations that quickly provided for what their employees needed. There was one company that I did some work with that as they sent employees home, it was grab everything from your desk that you need. You need the real estate of your monitor, take it. You need your ergonomic chair, take it. Take whatever you need so that you can get up to speed as fast as you can. I saw other organizations say, nope, leave your desk as is and just get out of here, almost like they've gotten a pink slip in a way. So that was really interesting to see how that happened. There were organizations that gave their employees stipends and just said, here is X amount of money, use it as you need. And that was very inspiring to somebody like me, that an organization realized that they were sending somebody home. They may not have an office set up. Their monitor may be the TV screen that their kids need for homeschooling. So it was really, from a research point of view, looking at and almost predicting who's going to do well with this and who isn't. And I really loved when I was asked by leaders or middle managers, what can I do? What can I do? And I said, first of all, it's great you're asking the question, but how about asking your team? Ask them what they need, because I can give you suggestions and places where to look, but ask them. They'll tell you and see what you can do there. So it was interesting to see who did that and who didn't.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I'm sure it's fascinating as well. Supposedly, the internet and our computers, and especially laptop computers where we can, where they're portable, wasn't that supposed to initially free us, give us more free time and life to live and to live well? It seems it's worked in the opposite. Everybody's on it 24/7, and if they're not doing it for work, they're on it to keep up with social media and all of that brings to bear.
Exactly. And boy, that's true. A lot of us who are of the age before the internet was there remember a blissful time of not having to look at a computer screen and actually do the unthinkable, pick up a phone and talk to somebody. You know, now we have personal emails, work emails, emails to receive our junk mail in. We have a work phone, a personal phone, all of it. And yes, while this was here to help us be more efficient, I would love to believe that it was never intended to completely take over our entire lives. And I think that's up to us to manage. That's probably a whole nother show for you. How do we manage the distractions in our life? But it's also part of the conversation that companies and organizations need to have about how connected we need to be. And there are entities that do need that. A 24/7 news cycle needs to have a way to connect with people that need to be reached. In other words, for breaking news and getting those shows on air and all of that. I know I'm preaching to the choir in a way. But there's other entities of organizations that don't need to be that connected that quickly. And in saying that, it's some of the conversations that happen when I go into an organization and offer a course that I call energy management. It's what are the things that are bogging down your team, and is it the requirement to be accessible 24/7, and is that necessary? So we have those kinds of conversations too. I really love that you brought that up, and anybody who's listening, and you and I and all of our colleagues probably need to do a little bit better job of self-managing that for our own well-being.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, 100%. It's really amazing. Where do you see you know, your position in the future of the work? Do you see yourself with all of this knowledge and expertise and understanding of it all as a thought leader, you know, and you're looking to sort of help usher it in? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. It's very humbling to be called a thought leader. I would love to be considered as being a member of a team to solve some of these very important aspects of it. What I love to do with my work most is what's called called action research. I like to go in and see what's going on, get an idea of what some of the key things are, and help start a conversation, and then facilitate a conversation among stakeholders, key members, about what is actually going on, and then being very boots on the ground. And that's the important part, is so as a thought leader or a thought instigator, a thought collector, I see myself as being able to go in and do a little bit of a deep dive, help leaders see what some of the key areas are, and then bring in the boots on the ground folks to talk about what can happen. So that's where I do my best work. I would really hesitate just only talking to leadership and never having a chance to sit shoulder to shoulder with the people who are actually out there doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And it's obvious that you're passionate about it and you love it. Tell us about your dissertation. What is the research that you did, and what did it show?
Wow. Jim, this was the unexpected thing that I got myself into, but I guess that is what makes it fun. I went into a PhD program looking at well-being, but from a totally different aspect. As I got into my coursework and looked at what topic would I actually want to zero in on, it was about well-being in organizations specifically, and then drilling down a little bit more, it was about what is impacting people specifically. And when I use the term well-being, I'm not talking about the wellness programs per se. Well-being is hard to define, and that's something that my research proved out, that as I went back trying to look at who defines well-being, what are the definitions, what would be the working context that I would like to use for my work? Well, all of the scholars that have gone before, going all the way back to Aristotle, Socrates, had a definition of what was well-being, and that was based on eudaimonia, happiness, all the way through the ages. And today, there is not a collective definition of well-being. So that was interesting to me. So as a nurse, I have my own interpretation that has to do more about disease management, let's say. To a psychologist, it's probably a little bit more in the emotional space. Anthropologists would look at more of a tribe or a group. So I got very intrigued by what does this mean in an organization. And I started to look at an intact team at a global company, and then the pandemic happened. I ended up working out of a co-working space and happened to observe that in this co-working space were people that were creative, tech, people working for global organizations that were in remote work, had always worked remotely, the whole gamut. There were 100 people that were members of this one co-working space. And I looked around and thought, wow, everyone is thriving in this open environment. And the same open environment in organizations is something that employees complain about. So what's the difference? So I interviewed people in this co-working space about what is well-being? What does it mean to you? And I found that everyone had a different definition, which kind of goes along with what the researchers said. The interesting thing was how they defined well-being. And in telling me their story of how they ended up working out of a co-working space, I heard stories about what we're seeing now, called the Great Resignation, that they'd had enough. And when I asked deeper questions about that, it was some things that we know, but we're not implementing in organizations. People left because of a lack of autonomy, a lack of freedom to do their best work in the way that they could do it best. They wanted to feel that they were competent. And when leaders leaned over their shoulders or told them that they had to work 8 to 5 and that they could only work in one certain way, it was crushing. And the group of people I interviewed had had enough and took bold, very bold steps to go out and find their own work or connect with people of like minds. And I have to say that there's probably an assumption that these are millennials. They weren't. The youngest person I interviewed was 22. The oldest person I interviewed was 70. So it really feeds into what we're seeing now about how organizations can continue to grow to hit all of their KPIs and yet make sure that their employees are being taken care of and able to do their very, very best work. So that's what my dissertation is about, and it is writing up the story of these employees, what I saw as their definition of well-being, and what I think that means for the future of work.
Which is really important. So many different variables and so many factors that come into play with all of this. It's really amazing. I think some of the things that you did, too, that I think is fascinating with the dissertation on well-being and work is the grand experiment in which to situate your research, because you've worked in all aspects of healthcare. You managed an on-site healthcare center at a global media company with manager, nurse, wellness coach in that setting, and you looked at aggregate data to see what the healthcare claims were, things that involve cardiovascular diseases, high blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol and more, anxiety, depression, obesity, type 2 diabetes, substance abuse. All of that is absolutely fascinating to have that sort of under your belt, that toolbox to kind of call upon in the work that you do, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that was the interesting part for me, to discover that going on in a young workforce and thinking, wait, this cannot happen, not to a group of individuals whose mean age was 34. No, this is not good for the world. It's not good for this organization. Something has to be done. And that was kind of the shock and awe and challenge for me.
Yes, absolutely. But it was valuable, and it is valuable, because then you can work through it. The whole point, really, I guess, oftentimes, is to leverage people and really allow them to become more than the sum of their parts. If you're monitoring each person individually, they all then can be, you know, as an individual, right?
Right, right. Some of the stories that I heard from the individuals I interviewed, one young woman who had worked for a marketing company, was her desk and the desks of other people that were graphic artists, copywriters in this media company, this marketing company, were kind of in a circle, and their boss was able to see their laptops and their computer screens. And this goes right back to, you know, the turn of the century with monitoring and supervising workers and assuming that they were going to not work hard if you weren't looking at them. And she was telling me that if she needed to get up and use the restroom, she had to ask somebody to move her mouse, because there was software on her computer that if her mouse wasn't working, moving, that it alerted someone that she may not be doing her work. And it's like, are you kidding? Are you kidding? So it's if we're not allowing people to take care of themselves so that they can really unlock their creativity, their intellect, to to do the work that they've been hired to do, it's a very sad state for an organization.
Sort of big brotherish in a way, and people don't really
they're not
thrilled by that scenario at all, because then you don't feel the freedom to you know, do your thing. I imagine if we all could live, you know, in a way where things were sort of, people took the time to listen and to really care, and more kindness and empathy, and there was appreciation.
Yeah.
I know in the world of leadership, some of that has been changing in the positive direction, where effective leaders are understanding that showing empathy and kindness and respect, and, you know, reminding everybody that we're all in this together as a team, and every little part is part of the turning of the wheel. It really expresses an acknowledgement of humanity that, you know, these are individuals, these are people, they have lives, we all do. That really can be not only productive, but can really help us in the assertion of wanting to live well, right? The understanding of humanity, coming at it from a humanistic approach.
Absolutely. And what everyone went through during this pandemic, nobody escaped without being impacted somehow. And if we can remind ourselves of what we all went through, each person that we know as friends, as colleagues, our group, whatever group we're in, and keep in mind what we know everybody was stretching to do, to accomplish, and see that this extraordinary effort that people went through and are still going through, that this is the human part. This is what makes us gloriously wonderful at what we do. We can't forget that. We're not robots. And I think the call to leadership would be to acknowledge that, to have those one-on-one conversations or small group conversations and let employees tell them their story. What were you dealing with? Were you taking care of a parent who had to pull out of an assisted living center and stay with you because you couldn't have access to them, and you're trying to homeschool your kids, and you're trying to meet your KPIs for your group, and, oh, how did that work? And most people say, I figured it out. I figured out that I needed to really attend to my parent at this certain time and get my kids up and running. And I got done what was immediate, but my brain just turned on into creativity when the house got quiet at 11 and I worked for 2 hours then. You know, what does it really matter if someone is able to take care of themselves in the way that they need to and get their work done and on time? I mean, you're a creative person, and if you get inspired at 10 o'clock to write something up, you know, why is that not allowed to happen at that time if it's getting in on time? So I think that humanity of how we ebb and flow is really important for us to all remember.
Sometimes you've got to capture the inspiration, bottle it up right then and there, because if you don't, it sort of dissipates and weakens. I interviewed Melissa Manchester on television once, and she said whenever she's inspired, and of course she's the music legend, she runs right to the computer, presses record on her recorder, and works it all out and saves it and records it and captures the inspiration, and then she comes back to sort of tweak it and fine-tune it from there. So go with the flow. Go with what, you know, your inspiration is at the moment, and seize the day. I encourage folks, can't believe this half hour is gone. Hopefully we'll chat some more, expand some more, maybe hear some testimonials too. LiveWellStrategies.com is the website. That's LiveWellStrategies.com. Deb Bucci, our very special guest, founder of the company, and we're so excited to have her here on the show, and a real pleasure. I really appreciate your being here on the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure to talk to you about this.
Keep up the amazing work, and we look forward to chatting with you again real soon, Deb. Amazing work you're doing. Very special guest, Deb Bucci of Live Wealth Strategies. This is your host, Jim Masters, joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode and you'll connect with Deb and the team. LiveWealthStrategies.com is that website. Stay tuned. We'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest celebrated right here for you on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for being with us, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit CloseUpTelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.